I want to begin today's session with a meditational exercise. This will help us to adjust from the attitude of passive listening, an attitude which we are all conditioned by long habit to accept as normal, to that of sharing in an experience of which the words on this tape are but an expression. For this is the direction in which we should be moving if we are truly taking a contemplative journey together. For to contemplate eventually leads to a sense of becoming part of the action. And therein lies the paradox, but just leave that for the moment. Don't work at it with your intellect. So wherever you are, alone or in a group, just begin to center down, as the Quakers call it. See that your body is in the position that we have considered together before, sitting with the back straight, the head erect, and the hands loosely in the lap. And allow your breathing to take a regular rhythm. Some of us perhaps have been very involved with all kinds of activity quite recently. And it isn't easy to detach. So we need the opportunity to put space between us and these strong tugs. There are parts of us that would clutch at things we've been doing, both in imagination and in emotional power, things that would pull us out of the present moment. The I's that we're surrounded with: I want this, I should be involved in that, I am feeling something else, and so on. A whole panoply of I's which surround us, and we need to step back from them, those tugs. So be aware of your body. Just observe it in your mind's eye. I have a body, but I am not my body. Be conscious of the emotions that tug, but just let them go. Let them go. Don't repress them. Be aware that you're standing back from all those pulls and tugs and wants, just for a few moments. I have emotions, but I am not my emotions. Be aware of the thoughts that chase one another through the brain. Don't struggle with them, but just let them go. I have an intellect, but I am not my intellect. Now, focus the attention on the center of the chest. Place which represents the still center within, the heart of the citadel. I am. Place of perception, control, and union with God. I am. And maintaining the stillness within, we listen as part of the experience which is ours together. A story is told among missionaries of one of their number working in northern India. He was a very zealous and conscientious missionary, and particularly concerned that the simple village people where he worked should learn to know the Bible and to pray. Week by week, he would gather together in his bungalow a small but earnest group of villagers for this purpose. At the end of each teaching session, all would kneel down devoutly by the chairs on which they had been sitting to pray together before departing. The day came when the missionary left for his own country and a year's sabbatical leave. At the end of this time, he returned once more to his place of work, and very quickly he called together all the members of his former group. Eagerly he questioned them about their progress during his absence. Had they continued to meet together? Yes. Had they studied the scriptures? Indeed they had. And had they continued to pray? But here his inquiry was greeted with a nonplussed silence. He repeated the question, somewhat puzzled. "But Sahib," responded one of the group, "how could we? We had no chairs." An amusing story, yes, but there is something here about levels of understanding. It is recorded of Jesus that in meeting with two of his disciples after the resurrection, they neither recognized him nor did they understand the scriptures. Then, we are told, he opened their minds that they might understand. He opened their minds that they might understand. Without this, it was impossible for them to recognize the truth, that is, to awaken to reality. The work had to begin within them, an inner awakening had to take place. This was always the great hallmark of the ministry of Jesus, awakening men from within that they might understand. We are told that he taught the people many things, but that without a parable taught he not. To the many, to the large crowds, parables were interesting, something amusing, and quite meaningful stories. For those who had ears to hear, they were the means of a shift in understanding from a lower to a higher level, or to use the popular language of our day, their consciousness was raised. Which brings us to the third of the sayings of Jesus, the essence of which we are trying to relate to in this course. And let us again remind ourselves that this is our sole aim. We are endeavouring to discern and to relate. It is no virtue to try and remember or to remember anything that is said. We're seeking to touch the dynamic. The natural gravitation is always toward intellectual curiosity and speculation, to which we frequently add, for good measure, discussion. The end product of this process is invariably trivialization and evaporation. This way cannot lead to understanding, only to its great counterfeit, the acquisition of information. I'm going to read now from St. John's Gospel, and I'm going to read fairly quickly and ask you to listen not so much to the words, but beyond the words, and to become aware of the whole picture or the themes that together make up a picture. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. This figure Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So Jesus said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not heed them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture." The teaching ministry of Jesus took place mostly in rural situations. Therefore, in operating on the principle of proceeding from the known to the unknown, he began by painting word pictures of rural scenes and activities. They involve the whole spectrum of life as lived, known, and understood by his hearers. So we have the picture in John's Gospel of the shepherd, the sheep, and the sheepfold. The imagery they clearly understood. Its significance was almost, if not entirely, beyond them. Jesus painted a picture of sheep moving freely in and out of the security of the sheepfold, of the good and admired shepherd known to and followed by the sheep, whom he in turn knew and called by name. Such was the dedication of the shepherd that he was prepared to lose his own life for the sake of the sheep. But, we are told, they did not know what all this meant. Then Jesus goes a stage further. I am, he declares, the door. By me, if any man enters in, he will find safety and go in and out and find pasture. From all this rich imagery, we may take what we wish, as depicted in 1,000 religious paintings, from the shepherd tending to dying for his sheep. But attractive as all the familiar and popular imagery may be, it is validated only in so far as it takes us beyond itself to its essential meaning, and beautiful pictures may quickly get lodged and stuck in the imagination. From there the emotions may be stimulated. But if left unrelated to the faculty for inner understanding, they subsequently dissolve into sentimentality or religiosity, and our last state is worse than the first. We remind ourselves then of that to which we have already referred, the principle that like calls always to like. And this law always operates in our approach to scriptures, determining our level of understanding. We see and hear according to that platform from which we are already operating. This course has been described as a contemplative approach to the scriptures. When we reflect, we examine the component parts. But to contemplate is to look at the whole. And to take this perspective requires that we ourselves are using the faculty which makes this possible. For this reason, we need again and again to center ourselves in that faculty. So once again, let us be still together. Silence gives birth to stillness, and it is by stillness that the clear pool of reflection is created within. The record of the discourse on the shepherd, the sheep, and the sheepfold is a collection of interweaving themes, and at the heart, I am the door. Here is access, security, freedom. Access, security, freedom. We have seen the picture, the imagery is clear. But if we are to move into the realities here depicted, all this must be internalized or realized within. And it is only as consciousness centers on the I am and away from all the pseudo or false eyes, which are but part of the personality clothing us all, that access into the world of reality, the world of true salvation can be found. May I take up again the word I have just used, that is, internalized. We are endeavoring in this course to steer clear of religious jargon. Of course, all language may become jargon, and all language may be devalued, which is exactly what has happened in the Christian Church. This is a particular hazard for the religious. But to avoid the terminology with which most of us are familiar, and which invariably lulls us safely to sleep, is not to depart from the unchanging truth which it symbolizes. Indeed, the reverse is true. In standing back and taking what we may call a contemplative look at the New Testament, that is, the sweep of its movement, we may see three distinct phases or stages in the internalizing of truth. First, the man Jesus operating as a tremendous catalyst in the society where he moved, but as a man, clearly external to their inner life. Secondly, Jesus in his resurrection body, the great prototype of what man is intended to be, but still reflecting the dynamic as external to the lives of his followers. Note that during the resurrection appearances, there was a tremendous preoccupation with appearances. All this had to give way to the third stage. And the third stage, the complete internalization of the dynamic, prefigured so powerfully in the incident we looked at in our first session. The words of Jesus to Mary Magdalene. Touch me not, do not cling to me. Here in this process, we see a whole movement or shift of human consciousness, not only symbolized, but affected by Christ. And it is to this that we must come if the imagery we have just considered is to have more than an intellectual or emotional appeal. Let us return once more to the words and feel again the underlying potential and possibility. I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved, and shall go in and out and find pasture. Access, security, freedom. It might be possible, though we shan't do it now, to do a little theological study to show that security and freedom sum up what the New Testament calls the fruits of the Spirit. But let us leave that for the moment. Undoubtedly, these two things are of the essence of the dynamic as it expresses itself in the pastoral scene at which we have been looking. Again and again and again, we are brought back inexorably in the New Testament to the point of access, the breaking through, the raising of consciousness, the entering in. I remember as a theological student preparing to go to India as a missionary, finding myself in some way being strangely impressed, that is the only way I can put it, by one of my tutors. It was years later, after his death, that I began to understand what had touched me through this man. Then I knew he had both an inner security and a great freedom of spirit. When asked questions, he never reached into some pigeonholes in the back of his mind for the answers. He never tried to remember what he'd once learned. Nor did he quote or appeal to external authorities. He spoke from within himself. I cannot remember one word he ever said, one thing he ever taught. I cannot even remember his voice. And curiously enough, when I try to recall his image, I cannot get much further than light. But I knew the dynamic was, no, is there, because somehow the realness of it has nothing to do with something past. It is a quality that speaks as powerfully now. There is at the heart of this picture, which enshrines the words of Jesus, something which we must reach out to on a level other than the intellect. Here is a tremendous paradox. There is the completion and rest of having entered in through the door, and there is the increasing activity, the unceasing activity of the going in and out to find pasture. There is finding initially through entering, but also a finding through coming out. For the I am indwells all things everywhere. Today, in our final meditational exercise, we're going together on a journey in imagination. So once more, make sure that you're sitting comfortably, relaxed and alert. And we allow to bring into use our faculty of controlled imagination, first of all, our faculty of controlled imagination. This is the first step. And the journey that we're going to take together, and just allow the pictures to come into your mind as you hear the words, the journey we are going to take together leads us to a beautiful mountain. So from the moment of setting out, you can see ahead of you the mountain. Just allow the colours, not only the mountain, but of the meadows around you, to reveal themselves. Be aware, if you like, of the sunshine. It's a beautiful day. And the smell and the feel and the sounds of summer. The picture is something quite apart from you, and yet you are part of it. And we begin to move in the direction of the mountain. Across the meadow, and at the foot of the mountain we begin to climb. We feel the grass under our feet. We smell the scent of the flowers. We hear the singing of the birds. And we climb. And as we climb, we look back into the valley below, aware all the time of moving upwards. Now we focus our gaze on the summit of the mountain as we climb. Far ahead of us we see the peak, the snow-capped peak. And as we climb higher and the vision becomes clearer, we see standing at the top of the mountain, not now very far ahead, a figure. And as we draw nearer, we see the beauty of this figure. It is the figure of the Christ. Maybe that your vision is that of Christ of the resurrection, but it is Christ in all his glory. And as you draw near, you feel the impulse to kneel before the figure, aware of the tremendous power and love and joy and compassion that he is radiating to all the world. The love, the power, the joy, and the compassion that he is radiating to all the world. And for a few moments, you remain kneeling in worship. Now I want to ask you, in your imagination, to rise from your knees, to stand, and to step forward and take the place of that tremendous figure, to be absorbed into this figure, to absorb the figure into your own being, and to turn and from the mountaintop, with arms outstretched, you allow the power, the love, the joy, and the peace to radiate. Just in the silence, allow this to happen. And now once more be aware of yourself as you are at this moment, sitting in your chair or lying in your bed. And be aware that as you are just now, the light is radiating from you. Christ in me, the hope of glory. Amen. May we now reflect a little further on those aspects of what we may call the Christ life offered to all those who will enter in. That is, security and freedom. Innate within all of us is the longing for security. Equally powerful is the pull towards the false securities, which, whilst investing us with a spurious sense of safeness, exact their toll by creating the wrong kind of dependencies. Ultimately, any kind of dependence, material, emotional or intellectual, and every conceivable kind comes under one of such headings, prevents us from growing up, from becoming our true selves. Unfortunately, or perhaps fortunately, the imagery used by Jesus in this picture has been invested in Western culture, certainly in the English language, with certain caricatures. Sheepishness, or to be sheep-like, or to borrow a phrase from the Old Testament and Handel's Messiah, like sheep have gone astray, are not flattering to the human ego. But then, to be realistic, should they be? The sheep in the picture offered by Jesus know the shepherd's voice. They follow him, and as we are told, a stranger they will not follow. Following the principle of from the known to the unknown, and what we have called internalization, we may see mirrored, both in the debasing and the exalting of the sheep image, an accurate reflection both of the human condition of fragmentation and its possibility of wholeness. Or, as St. Paul puts it, growing up into mature manhood to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. As before, today's reading will be followed by a period of silence, during which time you may record briefly your impressions during this session. Today's reading is from the Gurdjieff work by Kathleen Spieth. Each adult has many selves, each of which uses the word I to describe itself. At one moment, one I is present, and at another there is a different I, who may or may not be in sympathy with the previous I. This I may not even know that the other I exists, for between I's there are often relatively impenetrable defences called buffers. Clusters of I's make up sub-personalities that are related by association, some for business, others for family, others for the church or the synagogue, and so on. These clusters may not know other clusters of I's with which they are not related by association. One I may promise, and another may have no knowledge of the promise, owing to buffers, and therefore no intention of honouring it. One group of I's may rush enthusiastically into a marriage that makes others resentful and withdrawn. Certain I's may value and work towards an aim that others subvert, and one may suffer, quote, the nature of insurrection. Not only is human psychological functioning characterized by inconsistency, but this inconsistency is entirely determined by mechanical laws. The I that is in control of a person's behavior at any given moment is determined not by his or her personal choice, but by a reaction to the surrounding environment which evokes one or another I. The human being cannot of itself choose which I to be, much as one would like to. The situation chooses. Our behaviour is elicited, not emitted. And what happens to us occurs entirely because of external influences and the accidental associations of conditioning history. In the undeveloped state, which is our common lot, the human being is then like a very complex and intricate machine that, unlike other machines, has the potentiality of knowing that it is a machine. The human machine can study itself, and this study, if done rightly, may yield the clues necessary to attain another, higher level of being in which true will is possible. We close now with the Omega invocation. May the light that shows the way illuminate the mind. May the love that knows the truth unfold within the heart. May the power that gives true life arise within the soul. Let light and love and power raise all in Christ to God. Amen.